hppodcraft.com.
A is for Atlantean. Their science predicted the quake. There had been 2 centuries of warning temblors. With the acid of genetic engineering, they began a return to the ocean. It would not be a lost continent. It would be an abandoned continent. And throughout the ages that followed, humankind would search for lost Atlantis, never realizing that when the Earth split and the fires of the underworld seared the land, the Atlanteans would already have developed gill breathing and useful membranes. See, then, Cronoa, capital city of undersea Atlantis, snug and secure at the bottom of the Maricot Deep. Towers of porphyry and malachite lit with lambent flames from within. Walls of seaweeds and kelp, altered by chemical means to retain their flexibility yet suitable for buildings. Flying bridges and causeways, all hollow and shimmering. Cronoa, beautiful beyond belief. And, lying in a public square, an enormous lead canister, split open and holding darkness. An alien object dropped into Cronoa from above. See now the Atlanteans. Pale blue and great-eyed. Gentle expressions and wisdom in their open, staring, dead eyes. What God and nature could not destroy, the inheritors of the earth did.
That is the first entry from A to Z in the Chocolate Alphabet by Harlan Ellison.
Rather than being just a few paragraphs from the opening of a story, that was a whole story right there.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of value you're going to be getting this week on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lanky. We're here at hppodcraft.com and Patreon. Who the heck was that reader?
Why, that was Eric Peabody making his debut on the show.
Whoa.
Eric does freelance audio production, including cleanup, editing, and mixing for voiceover. That's podcasts, audiobooks, narration, whatever you need. He also does mixing and mastering for music projects. If you're playing in a rock band or it's an acoustic, unplugged kind of band, he'll do all of that stuff. I know a lot of folks who listen are into those kinds of things, so please, if you need some help with that sort of thing, check him out at vikingguitar.com. We'll put a link out in the show notes. And by the way, Viking Guitar is also the name of Eric's video game cover band.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty rocking, and you can find their stuff on YouTube. So I'll link out to that as well. Check it out. Eric, thanks so much for doing our reading today. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so we're back to doing another Harlan Ellison story from A to Z in the Chocolate Alphabet.
This is a strange name for a story. Fortunately, I have Harlan Ellison's collection, Strange Wine, and this is in that collection. And he actually wrote an introduction to the story. So we've got an author's own introduction to the story to explain to us what the heck is kind of going on with it.
Excellent.
So the title comes from a list of titles for stories Ellison wrote down, 10 titles. He used all of those titles as a jumping off point, except for Chocolate Alphabet. That was the one title he just was like, I don't know what to do with that one. It just sounded cool to him. He didn't know what it meant, any of that stuff.
Sounds delicious to me.
That gets set aside, this Chocolate Alphabet story.
Yeah.
He had this friend who is an artist, Larry Todd, and you can go see his work. He's kind of famous guy, who wanted Harlan to write some stuff for him to draw. To give him inspiration, Larry gave Harlan this painting called To Nemotropin. It's a picture of these crab guys with swords and shields fighting each other in a dungeon or a castle or something like that. You can find it online. Strange looking picture. So Ellison couldn't figure out what to do with this painting, so he got stumped. This is some time has passed. He got a very strange offer from this woman, Sherry Gottlieb, who owned this sci-fi bookstore called Change of Hobbit. Now, Change of Hobbit, it was this legendary bookstore that existed in West LA for a long time, but it closed down. He gives the address of this place, which was in West LA on Westwood Boulevard, which is now a Domino's Pizza. I looked it up. Everybody loved this place. Ellison loved it. Anne Rice loved it. A bunch of other sci-fi horror nerds loved this place. It changed locations a few times, ended up in Santa Monica in a couple locations, but eventually it closed down in 1991. So that was before our time there.
Right. Never got to go. But the place was so legendary. I had heard of it because, as you said, its last location was in Santa Monica. And the bookstore that I used to hit down there, which is also gone now, Midnight Special, had some signage up inside that said A Change of Hobbit. So I don't know if they got that from the original store or not, but that was the first time I'd heard of it.
Sherry wanted Harlan to sit in the front window of the store and write short stories. And then if you spend $10 or more at the store, you got a signed copy of that story that Ellison wrote that day. That was like her idea.
Yeah.
So he was going to do this for 6 days and there would be 6 stories. He says he's always up for doing crazy stuff, especially if he thinks it'll annoy people. The first day was fine. The story he wrote was Strange Wine, the story from the same collection. But the second day, he got stuck on what to write. That Tuesday, Ellison's apartment got flooded and Larry Todd's painting got wet. So Ellison took the painting with him to the store to drop it off to Larry later. Still stumped with what to write about, he remembered Chocolate Alphabet. You know, that title popped in his head for whatever reason. And he thought, oh, you know, maybe I can do a Frederick Brown short pastiche.
Frederick Brown was a sci-fi and mystery writer who apparently hated to write, if you read about him, which is odd. He would do anything to distract himself. And so often he worked in this specific short story style. I think now people popularly call it flash fiction. Of course, Brown didn't invent it. Flash fiction's been around as long as there's been fiction, but he sort of popularized it.
But Ellison thought, so why not do 26 of them? You know, it's alphabet, you know, 26 letters in the alphabet. So he worked all day and into the night on this. And there you go. That's how the story came about.
Sitting in the window of a bookstore, writing a story for each letter of the alphabet. If he weren't so good at it, I would think he was the biggest poser, you know? And this all happened in 1976, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I believe Ellison also wrote a sequel called From A to Z in the Sarsaparilla alphabet. And that one he did in the bookstore Dangerous Visions in Sherman Oaks, California in 1990. Oh. So, you know, he did this gig again. But we've got 26 of these to cover, so from the Chocolate Alphabet. So let's go ahead and jump in so we can get through them all.
Right. The first one, A, is for Atlantean, which is what we heard at the top. Badass Atlanteans who are killed by our pollution. Boo, humans!
Yeah, the cool thing about that one is that the Atlanteans didn't go under when their continent was lost. But they knew that it was coming, the earthquakes, and so they became amphibious before it even happened. Mm-hmm. Which is extra awesome about them, you know? But us land dwellers ruined it. And, you know, that's why I'm always on Namor's side when he declares war on the land.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Also because I want to curry favor with our future fish masters.
Good thinking. The next one is B for Breath Death. Breath Death is a black flower that grows all over the universe except for Earth. It kills every animal with spores on all the planets that it's been on. It is said that if you take the spores and make a juice out of it, and then drink that juice, that you will have eternal life. Nobody has ever tried it.
And I can understand why. Although, maybe this is that serum that the doctor developed in that story we covered, the rat, the immortality serum.
Oh, could be.
Hasn't anybody in outer space ever heard of a rat? You don't have to drink it yourself. Test it.
C is for Kushio. When Kushio was a boy, he was horribly injured in a wild animal attack, and he was made into a cyborg and became evil.
He killed his first when he was 15. By his 21st year, he ruled the continent with a guard of mercenaries as ruthless as himself. He went into space with an armada at the age of 30 and left behind him a route of road markers that had been lives and cities and thriving markets. The route of embers and mass graves.
So eventually he was defeated and stuck in a block of amber and is still alive. He can't ever die. And he becomes a boogeyman for kids. It says, Kushio will take you if you don't do good. Even though, of course, Kushio can never escape the amber.
Right in there. Cameras on him to make sure they know what he's doing all the time and stuff.
Yeah.
The quote-unquote regenerators that put him back together after that animal attack were too good at their job. So he's immortal now. And that's a pretty horrific existence, but I guess he was a bad guy, so you know, he deserves that kind of hell-like punishment. But you can see there's almost a stream of consciousness between these as you go along. Even though they're unrelated stories, some concepts lead into the next one. We're talking about immortality again.
The next one is D. D is for Deek.
Yeah, Deek, like seek. D-I-K-H.
So Deke is a mushroom person or thing that was once human who writes messed up stories on the walls of his labyrinthine grotto. One day when people are looking for fossil fuels, they will find him and they will read his messed up stories.
That are scrawled all over the walls. Yeah, that's basically what it is. But it's another being dwelling deep underground. So that kind of crossed over from the last one. There's no real thematic thread in these stories, but some things pop up again and again. Immortality, dealing with evil, definitely underground creatures, Like this next one, E is for elevator people. They never speak and they cannot meet your gaze.
There are 500 buildings in the United States that have these elevators that go way below ground level. If you press the sub-basement button twice, it will take you to an extra low level where the elevator people live and you will become one of them. They look like normal people, but they ride the elevator up and down, never making eye contact, never saying a word.
No idea what that story was about, really.
No.
But I hate elevators, so it scared me nevertheless to think that one could go that far down into the ground. Next is F is for Flenser.
A Flenser is a supernatural creature that is very kind. It telepathically takes your mental anguish away without you knowing it. And they live these lonely lives and are actually in the form of oddball people that you see out in the world. The ones whose socks fall down all the time and have pimples and odd conversation. So you should be nice to them.
I know the word Flenser from Judy Blume's book Blubber that I read back in junior high, which is about an awkward child a little like this. Judy Blume seems to be coming up a lot this month for some reason. But a Flenser is the person who cuts whale blubber off the animal.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and these Flensers do something like that, but it's the terrors of your past they remove rather than your blubber or parts of your body. So I liked this one quite a bit. I thought it was a cool story.
This next one is very short. It's G is for Gollum. Gollums are goyim that always wanted to be Jewish, but they never suffered enough guilt.
I can see Ellison thinking that little two-sentence story is particularly hilarious, but my eyes rolled so hard they fell out of my head.
H is for Hamadryad. Supposedly a tree nymph, but actually the wood of the tree that grew the fruit of the tree of knowledge, as well as the wood that was used on the cross that Jesus was crucified on, and I guess part of the ark that was built, which actually sank, according to the story. It didn't do as well as it supposedly did in the Bible. That's it. It just talks about this Hamadryad stuff, but it ends with toothpicks in Chinese restaurants should be avoided at all costs.
Okay, kind of dipping into the abstract there. I mean, it was just a story about some wood. Maybe he knows something we don't. I'll take his advice and avoid those toothpicks. Next, we've got I is for ice crawler.
Humans come up north, find this intelligent ice crawler creature, and they killed them for their white skins because of fashion. Until they thought that they had killed them all. But they didn't actually kill them all, and some of the ice crawlers survived, had more children, and then they warned their children about the humans.
They would teach their children what they had learned. And perhaps, one day, they would wear fashionable skins in 4 or 5 different colors.
So this is thematically similar to the Atlantis story. Awful people running out there and ruining nature. Except the ending there implies that the ice crawlers will eventually be getting their revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because as part of that story, it says the ice crawlers don't even understand hostility, right? They're trying to leave the Antarctic or whatever, and every time humans attack them, they go, oh, they must be approaching me in peace, and then they get murdered. So those few eventually get the message, go back, and now they're going to teach generations of other ice crawlers how to be hostile back. And they're going to be skinning and wearing humans, so, you know, revenge. By the way, Ice Crawler totally sounds like a creature out of a Silver John story.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. Then we get into J is for Jabberwock, which is a reference to the Lewis Carroll poem from Alice Through the Looking Glass, Jabberwocky, a kind of nonsense poem about a big creature called the Jabberwock. Although in this story, it's much smaller than one would expect.
Yes. In India, there's a secret temple where some monks worship the last living Jabberwock. A horrible creature. It's described looking completely inhuman. It has only one good eye and has two pupils. There's the two pupils again that we had on the slab. So these monks, they try and mate this creature with other animals, but its offspring always comes off lame and horrible.
Yeah, they made it with a pig, a camel, swans, and all of the offspring they keep in these glass cages, and these things are all a mess. They don't work right at all. So they must live lives of suffering.
So they even made it with a young girl, which kills the girl, but the offspring, they say they must change the soft cloth in the bottom of its nest 3 times a day. It sweats blood. So the monks don't know, but the Jabberwock is sentient. The thing that it wants more than anything is to die.
What is the deal with these monks? It says they're the holiest of holy men, but they're just torturing this creature and creating a gallery of monsters that they then mostly ignore. This one was disturbing, and it was one of my favorites. It was definitely one of the more Lovecraftian of the bunch. Also, I think maybe what prompted this is he says, Jay, okay, Jabberwock. Well, that poem, Jabberwocky, is full of portmanteaus where you're taking two different words and combining them together to make a sort of nonsense, silly word, but that one that you still kind of understand the meaning of, even though it's not real vocabulary. So that idea of combining different things might have thought, well, what if there's a little crazy monster and they're breeding it with everything and it's spitting out these nonsense creatures? I imagine that might have been where the idea came from.
It's very disturbing, and maybe it's just the misguidedness of religious fundamentalists.
Maybe, yeah. Or crazy scientists who don't really pay attention to things like a rat that you might give an immortality serum to.
Sure.
So here's another full story we can have a reader tackle. K is for Genghis Khan.
He was a very nice person. History has no record of him. There is a moral in that somewhere.
That was a really good one. And I don't think one needs to search very far for a moral.
No.
No.
Poor Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
L is for Loup Garou.
Yes, a werewolf story.
So this guy realizes that his neighbor is a werewolf.
Yeah, because he's from Ostrava in Czechoslovakia, he's able to recognize the signs in his neighbor, the hair on the palms, the shape of the nose. If he'd been from anywhere else, he might not have been able to recognize those things. So he's lucky.
He melts down some coins to make silver bullets. On the full moon, she attacks him. He empties the bullets into the werewolf. However, the American quarter has less than 1% silver in it.
It ends with times change, but legends do not. And I liked that one and had a little sweet irony to it at the end.
M is for Mumu. One should always wear one if one has more than 6 or 7 arms.
So true.
Yeah.
And next up we have N is for Nemotropin.
This is a story that he came up with for the painting by Larry Todd. So these insectoid creatures, the Nemotropin, are horrible beings, like just vile creatures. So much so that no one in the galaxy will trade or make alliances with them. So these creatures, they have a contest every year where the worst of the worst of them has to go through these challenges and battles until there's only one left. The winner is sent up to a satellite that was installed by the local powerful space federation that transforms the winning Nemotropin into a creature that would fit into a new planet. In the story, we have the last two of the contestants, Eril and Ankaj. They have one last battle in the Tunnel of Final Darkness, and Ankaj wins. He goes up to the satellite, is transformed into a new form, and then sent to this planet. He does quite well, and he becomes a prominent figure.
It says, there is an explanation for Attila, for Haman, for Cortez, for Borgia, for Christie and Specht, and Manson and Nixon, for Tokamada. But only the Nemotropin know the explanation, and they smile as best they can with bloody mandibles. So again, it's about the nature of evil and a kind of explanation for where all these jerks originate from. Mm-hmm. He spent a little more time on the story, I guess, because of the painting and his friend. Mm-hmm. But that's how it works. They want a weird Hunger Games on an evil planet. Then we have a 3-sentence one story that's very Lovecraft. O is for Ouroboros.
Banished from the earth, the great worm coiled ever so tightly and went to sleep. One day, he will awake. The moon will writhe.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah, I like that one. P is for Poltergeist. This one is about a ghost who was a pitcher for the Chicago White Sox in 1919 and threw a perfect game.
Yeah, that one I didn't like so much. I mean, it was fine, but I liked the snake eating its own tail on the moon better. If I had a quarter for every time I've said that phrase, I'd have a lot of quarters, but I still couldn't kill a werewolf with them.
Oh.
If I had a nickel for every time I've said that.
Q is for Quetzalcoatl. He did not come from space. He was not an alien. He did not build Toltec or even Aztec pyramids as landing beacons for flying saucers. His most obvious bad habit was a rather nasty appetite for freshly excised, still pulsing hearts. It is not true what they say about Quetzalcoatl and the virgins. Take it or leave it.
Does that mean that Quetzalcoatl was just a guy who liked eating hearts?
I guess
so. Is that what he's saying? And he doesn't care whether they're virginal or not?
He didn't mess with virgins. He didn't sacrifice virgins. He just killed guys for their hearts. And that's a weird one. I don't quite get it.
It's still entertaining to read. The next one is R is for Rock, R-O-Q.
In the future?
I think.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Detroit is a flying city, but during a big roller derby game, a giant bird, a rock, breaks through the dome and starts eating people. Then it moves to a servitor factory and eats the whole factory.
Yeah.
Then it drinks from Crystal Falls, and then it dies from drinking the water or maybe something in the factory, don't know, and then it falls down. The meat of the bird isn't any good for eating.
Not even for hot dog casings. That one was kind of neat with the flying cities and roller derby. You know, but the roller derby tips you off. I don't think it's the future. I think it's like an alternate present in the 70s. But I especially like the servitor factory. You know, like Detroit has been in decline ever since it lost a lot of auto factories. Maybe Harlan had the problem cracked way back in 76. Stop making minivans, start making servitors.
Yeah, well, I think that's in the video game. Oh, the one that just came on the PlayStation with the androids. I think that's all in Detroit. They make it a android factory town.
Oh, really?
And I think in the 70s, everybody thought roller derby was going to be the sport of the future.
Yeah, sure. That's why, wasn't Rollerball a big movie back then?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So maybe it is in the future. Well, then we have S is for Sulafidian the Sorcerer.
this is the longest story, one paragraph, but a whole page. And this is one I really love. This might be my favorite story in the whole thing. Yeah. So the narrator is at a fundraiser in Los Angeles, and there are celebrities there and lots of politics going on. George Carlin and Richard Pryor open up for this guy, Solifidion, the sorcerer. He's super tall and thin, and he looks like Mandrake the Magician. So, you know, like with the suit and the top hat and the cape. He asks the audience what their most secret desire is. And this lady stands up and says, I have a very painful, difficult period every month. Can you do anything about that? And then he just points at her. And then she smiles, stands up and says, oh my God. And then runs off laughing.
Yeah, presumably to go to the bathroom and test the magic out.
So the narrator speaks up and he says, I can't get a decent shave. My beard is like barbed wire and my skin is like a baby's instep. When I even use an electric razor, I cut myself and I get ingrown hairs and then I look like a 42-year-old kid with acne. Can you take care of that, sir? Solifidion points at him and then all of his facial hair just falls out and he's got the smoothest face now.
The roots of the hair fall out. Like he's never going to have to grow hair on his face again.
After he does that, it's pretty much one person after the other. They get miracles performed. He says he gave one woman a sensational nose job, made a talent agent's penis larger, cured one guy's color blindness, gave Bill Rossler back the sense of smell, and restored hair to the bald pate of the candidate. That was the guy who was running the fundraiser. He was in the middle of performing a vasectomy on Marty Shapiro when a stout woman wearing an improbable hat came stalking into the midst of the crowd. So she just starts yelling and laying into the magician, and she tells him that he needs to get his lazy ass home and do some real work. Yeah. And then he just kind of walks off all sheepish, and he's never seen again. It ends with, but you know, to this day, I'm always amazed at the magic hold some men have over some women, and that magic hold some women have over some men.
That was a funny one. And it's true, you know, he did all of these miracles, but it's even more confounding that she just told him to come home and he does it. I was a little disappointed that I didn't get more specifics about the Carlin Pryor two-person comedy routine, though.
Yeah, I know.
Because they both did sets, but then they got together to do a thing together, and that would have been awesome. This story also made me think of What We Do in the Shadows, the film. How Vlad the Poker was this powerful despot, but became weak from fighting with his ex-wife, you know?
Right.
It's good stuff.
So T is for troglodyte. It says, they live under the city dump, and they can eat almost anything except plastic containers. If it weren't for the troglodytes, we'd be took us deep in garbage. There's a whole lot to be said for returnable glass bottles.
To this day, there's a lot to be said for returnable glass bottles. Why does everything got to be in plastic? What we need now is a trog that eats plastic.
Yeah, we do.
Where are you with that, Chris? Next up, U is for Ophir.
Ophir is the doctor in hell. So they've got a doctor in hell. He helps demons with their ailments. When Semiasis gets a Charlie horse in his tail, he's given some medicine that doesn't react well. This reaction causes Semiasis to make it snow in hell.
Instantly, hundreds of thousands of foolish promises, idle boasts, dire threats, and contracts Satan had made containing the phrase, "It'll be a cold day in hell," on which he never thought he'd have to deliver, came true. Ophir was punished by being submerged to his nose in a lake of monkey vomit, while a squad of imps raced motorboats around him, making waves. California is not the only place where it's difficult to get malpractice insurance.
Yeah. V is for Vorwalika. Vorwalika is a vampire who moves into a hippie commune to get easy feeding, but he dies. It ends with, the coroner's inquest did not reveal that he had been a creature of darkness, one of the dread vampires of the old country. What it did reveal was that he had died from an infectious hepatitis.
Showing those dirty hippies, giving monsters hepatitis. He thought it was going to be easy there on the commune, and then he got an STD.
That's what you get.
W is for Wand of Jacob.
So an old man, Alfred Jacoby, is attacked by street hooligans on a train platform. They were doing graffiti, and then they decide that they're going to rough up this old man at 1 a.m.
He's a blind guy, too. That's how bad they are. They're going to rough up this blind guy, who up till now, mysteriously, even though he walks all over the city, has never had any problems. But this story fit into one of my favorite genres, which is New York in the 70s was a dystopia filled with porn and evil punks. There's a lot of stories and films. Make New York. I was scared to death of New York when I was a kid because I thought that if you go in there, you just get attacked immediately.
The Warriors was a documentary.
Yeah, the Warriors was a documentary.
Old man, he lifts up his cane and then the young men just disappear. All that's left is a spray of paint on the wall of a group of young men screaming in horror.
That was a cool ending, you know? His magic cane turns evil 70s punks into the graffiti that they normally punish the city with. They should have thought about that when they did that remake of Death Wish. You know?
Yes,
it's a much more interesting punishment than just regular old gun violence. X is for Zaphan, demon of the Second Order. At the time of the Rebellion of the Angels, he proposed that the heavens be set on fire. For his perfidy, he has forevermore stoked the furnaces of hell. It is never good to have dissatisfied help working in one's company. Zaphan is steadily overloading the boilers. Pay attention to stories about the melting polar ice cap. Zaphan is programming for Armageddon, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it. So there you go. Maybe people who deny the science behind climate change should just be told this story about Zaphan. And then if they don't believe science, they can believe this.
There you go.
This
done and done.
Harlan's work is full of solutions.
Y is for Yggdrasil, the legendary Nordic ash tree with its three roots extending into the lands of mortals, giants, and the Niflheim. The land of mist grows in Wisconsin. Legend has it that when the tree falls, the universe will fall. Next Wednesday, the State Highway Commission comes through that empty pasture with the freeway.
Again, coming apocalypse goes from one story and flows into the next one.
Yeah.
Harlan Ellison seems deeply disappointed in humanity. That is in all of these stories.
Yes.
Okay, so here's the last one, which is odd. Z is for zombie. This story is about Howard Hughes, and it says he didn't actually die in 1976. He actually died in 1968, choking on a McDonald's burger. But he'd made a deal with Mama Legba, who's some kind of voodoo priestess, I imagine, who raised him from the dead as a zombie. It says the corporate entity is mightier than death. And then here's the last bit of that story.
But the end is near. At this very moment, training in the Sierra Maestra is an attack squad of Fidel Castro's finest guerrillas. They know where Hughes went when he evacuated Nicaragua 1 week before the earthquake. Zombies have precognitive faculties. Did you know that? And they know the 1976 death story is merely misdirection, like all the other death rumors throughout the preceding years. They will seek him out and put him to final rest by the only means ever discovered for deanimating the walking dead. They will pour sand in his eyes, stuff a dead chicken in his mouth, and sew up the mouth with sailcloth twine. It would take a mission this important to get the fierce Cuban fighters to suffer all the ridicule. Bayonet practice with dead chickens is terribly demeaning.
And that is the end of the stories, plural.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, counting last week's story and the one that we're going to do next week, we can actually say we covered 28 Harlan Ellison stories in 1 month. And that's just the sort of bragging that really grabs people's attention.
It sure does. Yeah.
I want to mention that I actually read this story hard copy from the Ghost Box 2.
Right.
And these are collections we mentioned in our episode with Patton. He edited them. They're really wonderful collections and beautiful pieces of art, little magnetic boxes. This is one of his selections for the second one. I really recommend folks check these out. The stories are separately printed in little pamphlets in the box, and it was a really good way to devour this one. Now, next week, we are going to finish up our Harlan Ellison month with The Hour That Stretches.
Yes.
I know nothing about that story.
I know it has to do with Harlan Ellison being on an old Los Angeles science fiction radio program called Hour 25.
Well, that's something I was never familiar with, so I look forward to
it. Me neither.
I definitely look forward to reading that. I want to thank our reader once again, Eric Peabody. Remember to check him out for your audio production needs. He's at vikingguitar.com. We'll link out in the show notes. If you're working on something and you need somebody to come in and master it out or cut it for you or whatever you need, look him up. He's into doing that kind of stuff. And finally, I want to thank some patrons.
No, I don't.
What? Quit lying. I know before the show you were like, I can't wait to thank the patrons at the
end. I get so excited about it, but I want to look tough, you know?
I know, dude. It's all right to be vulnerable.
All right.
We're going to be vulnerable with this list of people right now. Michael Smoot, I really care about you, man.
Eli Fox, you're great.
Aiden McSweeney, I think about you always.
Justin Gebhard, I think I love you.
George Kennedy, you're breaking my heart with how awesome you are.
Oh, boy. I don't know if I can top that one. Jamie Morris, you complete me.
Zinc, I really care.
Connie Munoz, you're like heaven.
I want to thank Michael. It's just one name, but two hearts between us.
And last but not least, I want to thank Alexis Hibbler, a deity in human form, blessing us with her presence.
Wow. See, don't you feel better now?
I sure do.
Yeah, that tough guy stuff. All it does is harden you to the world and make you cynical and sick.
I don't want to be those things.
No, you don't at all. Thanks so much to our patrons for making the show possible. That's all we've got this week. All 26 of those stories. Hope it was enough for you. We're going to be back next week with more Harlan Ellison. For now, I am Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
At hppodcraft.com.
hppodcraft.com.